So that's what hopefully
for now, and not for any
future. Sound is a material, there's no doubt about it, in the way that stone is a material and wood is a material and sound is a material, but it doesn't have a physical presence. Well, it's expanded and it's changed to bring in more artists, and more artists seem to accept that sound can be used as a primary medium in art. Prior to that, it wasn't. Sound was just one of those things that was there, but I argued at the time that sound was a very unique and powerful medium that shared a lot with other media, such as painting and sculpture. Good parallels you could make there. And also, it was of a conceptual art period, I suppose, really, where you didn't need objects in galleries or on walls. So you had to invent at every point.
William Furlong.
When I started working in sound, it was all analog, and I worked on quarter-inch tape. And I had to cut the tape with a blade, so that in itself was quite sculptural. The idea of an intervention that cut a material into two halves. So that's how I started with sound, going back not that long ago, but it wasn't digital, it was analog. And that means that, it was physical, quite physical material to work with as a process.
In the 60s and 70s, a group of British artists moved from traditional art forms to conceptual art and process-oriented practice. Artist William Furlong established Audio Arts magazine in 1973, mapping the contemporary art scene through the means of sound, using the voice as a sculptural material in replacement of objects. Audio Arts was a sound magazine published on audio cassette, running until 2006, collecting hundreds of conversations with artists and curators. It now represents the most substantial archive of original recordings of contemporary art.
When I first did Audio Arts, I didn't change anything. I had to cut out things, but that was because of the duration of a tape. And if you've got six items on an hour-long cassette, you only want 30 minutes a side. So I had to listen to it over and over again. And this is interesting, how I've edited tape, not the way authors edit text on the printed page, but I've listened to it over and over again, and I take out things that sound better and better and more interesting the more you listen to it. And you could parallel that with making sound works, because the more you listen, the more things you hear, and the more possibilities you come up with. It's become clearer in recent years that I'm trying to find things out when I have a conversation. I want to know about you and about what you're interested in, what your thoughts are, and therefore my questions will pursue those things, and other things won't be as interesting, but only that really. The more fruitful the questions are, the more you get back. I'm wondering if there's a better way of putting that, but you asked me if the way I interview has changed, and the answer's no, but I think that you listen more intensely as you, the more interviews you do, the more you listen. When you start, you, like most conversations, you're not listening to everything. It goes, slips by. In casual conversations, you don't listen to much at all until somebody says something that arrests your attention, like a motorcycle going past the villa here on the road outside.
To meet William Furlong is to go to the roots of our own practice. That means to meet artists, to meet people, and asking questions. This is a shortcut of our first encounter, where we asked him how his way of interviewing is changed and how artists' speech is changed.
To a certain extent, I think artists are better at talking now about themselves than they were in the past. And there were periods, like in the 60s, when artists didn't talk about themselves. It was what you didn't do. I remember at the Venice Biennale trying to get an interview with someone called Leon Kossoff. Now, he belongs to a group of British artists who came to the fore in the 60s and 50s in England, but they had this principle of never talking about their work. I think it was some idea that if you talked about it, you'd lose it. You know, it would evaporate. Yeah, I think artists have generally become more articulate, and curators are usually academically trained. So they've got degrees in English, so they're good at talking. And artists didn't. Artists went to art school, in England anyway, where there wasn't much analysis. It was just really do it and get on with it and don't talk about it. Not talking about it was actively encouraged. It wasn't accidental. It was very much what you didn't do. But since conceptual art came along, we've got an industry built up around talking about art and writing about art. Let's not forget writing. In the period of conceptual art, artists wanted to talk, and that broke through that veil of silence. So no, conceptual artists talked a great deal about their work.
On the other side, Furlong remembers Andy Warhol, who wasn't that much into talking and theorizing. The only meeting, in Furlong's words, was...
painful. I did an interview with him. I was invited to lunch with him by Anthony Doffey. And we sat round this table and had a rather splendid lunch. He didn't eat anything except drink water and a bit of dry bread. And turned to a friend to answer the questions. Warhol was, to begin with, clever because he was very aware of speech. That's why he carried a tape recorder for a long time. You know, wasn't interested in art theory at all, although his words, when printed, are very good theoretically. But no, that was an excruciatingly difficult lunch, and I think Andy Doffey thought something might come out of it, but it didn't. Perhaps my questions weren't clever enough or something, I don't know. But it didn't, it wasn't the case, because he just enjoyed talking about banal things. If I said to him what colour was his favourite tie, that would be as interesting to him as if I asked him, name who you think is the most important artist of the 20th century and why. That would throw him a question like that. I mean, I feel slightly uncomfortable talking about him now because he's not here to shrug his shoulders. But he was a good example of articulously gone mad, you know, and he got to where he got without saying very much. But of course his work did say a lot. If you look at them, they're very complex pieces. And it's what's around them is complex too. You know, the culture and the times he's doing them. Those big portraits of Mao Zedong and Elizabeth Taylor, they say everything about the 20th century. But he's not doing it through words, he's doing it through imagery.
In New York, showing the pictures which we're dealing with tags. These are just sort of scraped from the walls and the floors of London, yeah. This time you scrape the leaves from...
You can now listen to some bites of a selection of his conversations with artists at Villa Romana in Florence, where the exhibit Speaking to Others, Who Speaks to Who presents a newly commissioned work by William Furlong, created in response to the spaces of the villa itself, from June 26th to the end of August.